This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Happy New Year, America. Thanks for joining us as we remember some of the best interviews, experts, and guests that we had on Bill Martinez Live this past year.
2017 was a year of downright viciousness, some folks say, with identity politics happening, most of it taking aim at President Trump.
His motives and his actions are contemptible, and I will fight every day until he is impeached.
President Trump did a tweet last night and a tweet this morning. Not presidential.
The president's fitness for office is something that is being called into question. I'm very worried about his fitness.
So, will we see more division in 2018, or is there a chance for unity? Here to debate it, political analyst with Media DC, Ron Meyer, and Democratic strategist Mustafa Tamiz. Thank you both for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. So, brand new year. Do we expect everybody's just going to get along now? What do you think, Ron? New year.
Well, it is a new year, and I think Americans deserve it. I think we deserve politicians who want to work in a bipartisan fashion, want to work together, don't want to be divisive. But the truth is that we do have something different, and because, frankly, it's going to be an election year, so we have reason to believe that it's not only going to get worse, it could get much worse, because really Democrats right now, you can see from these clips, the only thing that they're running on in 2018 is opposition to President Trump. And I think in 2017, that worked a little bit because his approval ratings were getting down, but ever since tax reform, it's been improving pretty dramatically. And so they're hoping for a 2010 but reversed, right? So they're hoping the opposition party wins. But here's the thing. In 2010, Republicans were running against Obamacare. They're running against a stimulus package that wasn't working. In 2018, so far, the economy is doing pretty well. Tax cuts have only sent his approval ratings up so far. And when people actually start seeing more money in their pocket, I don't think you're going to see the numbers continue to I think they're going to level it, not go up.
Something that could change, though, and we're told is on the agenda possibly right away, is this possible bipartisan agreement when it comes to DACA and immigration? So, Mustafa, I'll ask you that question. Do you see that on the horizon soon in the new year?
Yeah, I think that's coming right around the corner as well as a number of other things. But in 2017, the President Trump has been more of a divider-in-chief than commander-in-chief, whether it's the NFL game or Charlottesville. He seemed to rather go for his Twitter account rather than, you know, pick up the mantle for leadership. And he's continued to just attack and open up wounds in American politics that we haven't seen since the 60s. And I don't know what it'll take for him to drop his Twitter account and pick up the mantle of leadership and try to bring us together. But he hasn't done that yet.
But what do you think in terms of the things that he has accomplished in terms of what Ron was just talking about? Because you can't deny the economy is doing pretty great right now.
Absolutely. Look, the economy has been all-time great. I mean, the stock market is in record numbers. Unemployment rates are low. He's building on what Obama had started. But the challenge is he's not tried to bring American people together. We've never been more divided as a nation since the 60s
till now. Well, there's an opportunity.
And a lot of it, whether you support President Trump or not, you got to admit that it's coming from him because he is the leader of our nation.
Well, there's an opportunity to do that now, though, Ron, in terms of, you know, immigration reform and DACA. And the budget, which is what's the deadline? January 19th, January 19th.
Yep.
So do you think that's a possibility to bring everyone together, both sides, Democrats, Republicans, the president as well?
Well, and it's also important to point out that Democrats supported building the wall, which is something President Trump ran on just as recently as a couple of years ago. And so coming up with a compromise on DACA should be pretty attainable because it's something, there's stuff that both parties ought to support in there. And then the other big thing that we really need to look forward to, and President Trump's spoken a lot about this, is infrastructure. It's something that Democrats have said they support for a long time. I think Trump's going to be pushing this, and this is something that most, I think, conservative Republicans are skeptical of, but a lot of Democrats have been supportive of. And so we'll see if he's able to bring the Democrats on board. The problem is that I don't think it's in the Democrats' interest to deliver Trump any bipartisan wins. And so they're going to find excuses to vote against bipartisan legislation. And I think that's why you saw not one Democrat vote for tax reform, even though many of them ran on a lot of the principles that were in tax reform. If you look at Joe Manchin or these nine other Democrats that represent states that Trump won, I think most of their constituents wanted them to vote for tax reform.
Joe Manchin was a surprise, actually, I think. Well, Ron, and Mustafa, thank you both for joining us. Let's hope that everybody kind of maybe decides to do things in the best interest of their constituents and the American people moving forward to 2018.
We can hope.
Yeah. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Happy New Year.
Have a great day.
ID Stronghold wallets are different. They may look the same on the outside. They're stylish. They'll hold your cards and cash. But they're hiding something great on the inside. No, there are no pyrotechnics. And it doesn't sing when you open it. But it does have magical powers. ID Stronghold wallets protect your critical information and identity from thieves standing right next to you. Protect your family this holiday season with affordable leather ID Stronghold wallets and purses. Anyone can buy a cheap RFID scanner online and snag your information just by walking past you. Contactless credit cards, debit cards, even your work ID badge. ID Stronghold was the first to pioneer RFID blocking technology over 12 years ago. Secure your identity and save 10% by using coupon code PRESENT for a limited time at idstronghold.com. That's coupon code PRESENT, also available at walmart.com, eBay, Amazon, or QVC. idstronghold.com.
Bill Martinez here, and you're listening to the best of 2017.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Well, hello, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. It's always great to have you along with us, sharing a part of your day. Stanley Weintraub is with us. Historian, biographer, and a professor emeritus of the arts and humanities at Penn State University. Author of Silent Night, the story of 1914 Christmas truce, and General Washington's Christmas farewell. His most recent work is A Christmas Far From Home, an epic tale of courage and survival during the Korean War. Stanley Weintraub, I think it's been a year or so since we've last talked, but it's good to have you back to talk about these perfect topics for this holiday season.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk about General Washington's Christmas farewell, a Mount Vernon homecoming in 1783. Lay out the backdrop for us.
Yeah. In 1783, the war seemed over. That is, the Revolution seemed over. Most of the American forces, that is, Washington's forces, had already disappeared back to their farms and their villages, and there were very few of them left. But there was, the war wasn't really over. The war wasn't over because New York City was still in the hands of the British, and Washington could do nothing about that because the peace treaty had not yet been signed. It had taken about a year for the peace treaty negotiators to get to work and conclude a treaty. The reason for that was geography, distance. After all, there were 3,000 miles between Europe and America, and the peace treaty was being negotiated in Paris. The Americans had to go back and forth across the Atlantic. The British only had to cross the Channel. But the problem was, how did the British get out and how did the Americans get in and conclude the war?
Exactly.
This was finally settled, and Washington had to bring his troops in. The troops were in northern New York on the Hudson. There was a problem in getting enough troops together in order to occupy New York. Meanwhile, the British had sent dozens of ships across the Atlantic to evacuate their troops from New York. After all, given the size of ships at that time, the sailing ships, of course,
right,
it took a lot of ships to take a few thousand men out of the country. Washington came down through Yonkers with his forces, entered the Manhattan area. There was no fighting, of course. They had all agreed that the war was over. It was just a matter of getting the British out. But Washington had to say farewell to his troops.
Yeah. But to orchestrate the reoccupation of New York, because even though the papers were signed, it took a lot of time. It's like anything. You don't know until you know, and you see them, getting on the boats and, moving back to, heading back to England. I mean,
Washington came down, met his troops at a tavern in the north of Manhattan, and gradually they worked their way down. Washington wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. It was important for him to get back. He had had enough of war. He had been a general for 7 years, had only been back to Mount Vernon once or twice during that entire time, and he was very eager to get back. Christmas was coming. This was the beginning of December in 1783. He finally got down to the center of Manhattan and met his troops at a tavern where he was going to say goodbye to them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to see him go because they all admired him tremendously. And they thought there was no way he could be replaced.
Right.
But he was eager to go, and they met him, and he called them all forward at the tavern one by one. These were the officers, not the enlisted men.
Right.
He met them one by one, shook their hands, and said he was going to leave and return.
Mm-hmm.
They wept. They were very sad to see him go.
Well, was he, in a sense, kind of the reluctant leader? I mean, it wasn't a position necessarily that he was, bidding for in any way. I mean, it was just the circumstances, I think his own personality all coming together that thrust him into this situation that took over him. It wasn't, him. It seems like historically everything you read about Washington, that he was in many ways a very humble figure. And saw a job that needed to be done. At one point, they wanted to make him king, right?
Well, that was one of the problems. Who was going to replace him? What was the country going to be like? The country was still under the Articles of Confederation, which was a loosely grouped colony arrangement. Where the colonies were practically independent of each other,
right.
And only raised taxes for themselves. So there was really no one to afford an army. Washington wanted very much to have the Articles of Confederation revised so that the country could be more unified. But there was no way he could do that except through his own person.
Mm-hmm.
And he determined that he was going to travel back to Mount Vernon from New York City. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Travel back and use his own personality as a means of reunifying the country.
Mm.
He crossed from Manhattan into New Jersey and went down by wagon and by horse with a group of soldiers down through Trenton. And into Philadelphia.
Talk about the ultimate farewell tour, huh?
Yeah. And this was a farewell tour.
Yeah.
Everywhere he went, people crowded the streets, cheered him on. He had to stop just about everywhere, climb aboard his wagon, and make a speech, and then go on again. It was quite a homecoming, because one by one, he had to go down into Philadelphia and then through Delaware and into Baltimore on his way to Mount Vernon, which was across the Potomac. But he was determined that he had to resign. He had to leave the army and go back to civilian life. And he did so in Annapolis. This was the key. Every town he went to made a great fuss over him.
Yeah, I bet.
As you said, he didn't want to be king, but people pressed him.
Exactly.
We need a leader.
Well, Stan, we got to leave it right there. We got to go to break. We'll be right back. More from Stan.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's F-I-V-E starsoap.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of blindness in people over 55, but with treatment it can be slowed down, stopped, and in some cases reversed. Make sure you see your grandchildren grow. Protect your vision by requesting information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD, or go to the website fightblindness.org, where I found so much helpful information, or again, call 1-800-BLINDNESS today.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritional meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Remembering 2017 with the best interviews we had on Bill Martinez Live.
Bill Martinez Live.
Come, they told me, pa, 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 pa.
different. Back with you, America, 19 minutes after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here, our conversation about the one and only George Washington, his Christmas farewell to Mount Vernon, his homecoming in 1783 with Stanley Weintraub, historian, biographer, and a professor emeritus of the arts and humanities at Penn State University. George Washington and his wife celebrate Christmas together. He actually comes to the plantation on Christmas Eve that year, right?
Oh, he came there on Christmas Eve. I don't think he could possibly have timed it that way. The coincidence was tremendous because he had to make so many stops en route. The Continental Congress met in Annapolis, and he formally resigned in Annapolis at that Continental Congress. There was a big banquet for him. Of course, there was a great deal of speech making. They didn't want to let him go, but eventually he got on his horse again and crossed by barge to the other side of the Potomac. He wasn't very far from Mount Vernon, his home.
Right.
And when he got there, it was actually December 24th. He hadn't expected to be home for Christmas, but in Philadelphia, where he had stopped, he had actually bought some Christmas presents for his wife and for his foster children. He had no children of his own by Martha Washington, but he bought trinkets, and he was actually going to have a Christmas in his own town. When he came to Mount Vernon, the lights were on. They were waiting for him. They had no idea that he'd be there on time. And he got there just in time for Christmas Eve dinner, which was remarkable. And it turned out to be more than remarkable than he thought, because on Christmas Day, it snowed like hell. And he could not have possibly have made it home.
No, he would not have. Could you? Yeah, exactly.
So Washington made it for Christmas, and that was the end of his political career, so he thought. At least he expected it to be that way.
Right.
But the Articles of Confederation needed mending, and although he was a civilian, several years later, he was asked, would he come back and chair a convention to revise the Articles of Confederation. So he left Mount Vernon for what he thought would be the last time and went to Philadelphia for the Constitutional Convention, as it turned out to be, because the Articles of Confederation were too weak and they had to really make a new Constitution altogether.
Yes.
They did so, and he was chair. And they invented a presidency, and there was no question about who would be president. Washington, of course, was named unanimously as president. He didn't want to be.
Everybody took a step backwards real quick, right?
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Back in London, King George III met with Benjamin West, the famous artist who had been the Philadelphian, and the king asked West, what do you think Washington is going to do? Is he going to become king? And West said what he heard is that there's no question that Washington would refuse to become king.
Exactly.
And the king said, if that's the case, he'll be the greatest man in the world.
Wow.
To refuse to become king.
How prescient was that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, without a doubt. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left here, Stanley. I did want to talk about one of my special times in history is when we look back in World War One, 1914, Silent Night, the real Silent Night that happened on that incredible night, the Christmas truce. Tell us about that.
When I was working on a book on the armistice that ended the war in 1918, I found evidence that there had been a truce on Christmas Eve, 1914, the first year of the war. And the historian said it was only a myth. It really didn't happen. But I was very curious about it. I did a lot of digging about it. I went to London several times and went through diaries and manuscripts and the evidences of the war. And I discovered that the troops had actually written home about the Christmas truce. Right. It actually had happened. The Germans and the British had actually met in no man's land, exchanged presents, drank to each other's health, sang Christmas carols, and the troops wrote home to their families about it, and the families sent the letters to newspapers all over England, and I found the letters in village newspapers all over England that were stored in the London newspaper library. There was no question about how it happened. And the fact that they played football is the most amazing thing. Football, of course, was their soccer.
Soccer, yes, exactly.
But they cleared no man's land in many places of shell holes and the dead bodies. And they literally improvised football games. And I didn't believe that could happen, but I found that the original games had been recorded in company diaries. Every company had to keep a record.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the British and the Germans not only kept record of the games they played, but even the scores. And the Germans won most of the games.
Of course.
The truce did not last.
Well, that was the only thing that could probably satisfy Hitler, who heard about them stopping the war. He said, what are you doing stopping the war? Yeah. This is not what Germans have. Yeah. Have you no gall? Have you no pride, national pride? And they said, of course we did. We won.
Hitler, of course, had no part in it, right. But he was on the front lines as a corporal. And he said that he didn't believe in Christmas and he wouldn't observe it and he wouldn't have anything to do with it. He stayed back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But the troops in some places continued the truce, not only after Christmas, but the next day, which was called Boxing Day in England, where you gave presents to your servants.
Right.
And the Germans did much the same thing on what they called St. Sylvester's Day, the same day after Christmas. The truce petered out little by little as the senior officers who had nothing to do with it and were way back on the line, from the lines 30 miles away in chateaus, mm-hmm. Ordered the troops back to fight. The troops refused to fight, and so they replaced them with troops from the rear areas who had been indoctrinated to hate, and the war continued. It was the only truce. There was never another one.
Well, you've got in your book British Corporal John Ferguson, his statement, we shook hands, wished each other a Merry Christmas, and were soon conversing as if we had known each other for years.
And in fact, some of them had,
mm-hmm.
Because some of the German soldiers, it turned out, had been in England working as shoemakers and barbers and waiters and so on,
mm-hmm.
And knew a lot about England and they spoke English, and that was one way that the truce was able to continue, because although the British didn't know German, many of the Germans knew English from their connections there.
Exactly. Well, one of my favorite Christmas artists and Christmas CDs from Colin Ray immortalizes that event in one of the holiday songs that is absolutely precious. And, you know, you think for a moment, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to all men. You know, this is what this season is all about. And as he sings, if it could happen then, why can't it happen now?
Well, it can't happen now because it was a matter of common cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Our fighting in recent years has been with an enemy that is very different in culture from us.
Exactly.
And so there is no Christmas to celebrate mutually.
Stanley Weintraub, we got to leave it right there. Yeah. Again, thank you so much. You are a gift, sir. I appreciate it. Stanley Weintraub, historian, biographer, professor emeritus of the arts and humanities at Penn State University. Have yourself a Merry Christmas.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder. Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body. Why take another pill? Treat your aches and pains with Sunshine Pillows. Microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body heating wraps. Sunshine Pillows and wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it, even while driving. Sunshine Pillows are designed with your comfort in mind, will not burn you, and will stay balanced on your body to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunshine Pillows start at just $20. Join hundreds of our happy customers and see why Sunshine Pillows has a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. Click sunshine-pillows.com and take the Sunshine Pillow Challenge. That's sunshine-pillows.com.
Have you checked your ECS lately? We have. We are New Pharma, scientists who specialize in human functions controlled by the endocannabinoid system, or ECS. Let me simplify. Your ECS is involved in physiological processes like appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and immune systems. New Pharma's patent-pending science is the big difference in our natural solutions, formulated for your well-being. For example, our foundation product provides targeted nutrition to support a healthy endocannabinoid system, which is directly responsible for managing and controlling inflammation. This product contains turmeric, which is known as one of the best anti-inflammatories on the planet. Our allergies product contains sage, which is a very effective decongestant. See all of our amazing capsules, essential oils, and ECS herbal teas at GNUPHARMA.com. New Pharma. Your path to wellness begins here.
Bill Martinez here, and you're listening to the best of 2017.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
From the Duck Boys, yes, a little, seasonal music. Why not? 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back, America. Ed Conard is with us, a New York Times bestselling author, visiting scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, former partner with Bain Capital, and we always appreciate his perspective here, especially now that we're talking tax reform. Maybe, Ed, we can get outside of this Trump derangement syndrome that has compromised our understanding and reporting of what tax reform in this country looks like.
Isn't that true?
Life could be a dream. Shaboom, shaboom, I think they said, right?
I think in this tax reform, there's certain things I think are really valuable to the United States. Mm-hmm. Some things where I scratch my head a little bit, but overall, I think the trade-offs look pretty interesting. I think the corporate tax cut is really an accelerator for growth. I think it's actually going to produce more revenue than it costs. It costs about $500 billion over the next 10 years, but the Joint Committee on Taxation said it would produce about $400 billion of additional revenue. Mm-hmm. And there's another $400 billion of taxes that get extended year after year after year that scoring assumes we're never going to collect those taxes, but we were never going to collect the taxes anyway because we extend all those tax cuts anyhow. So I think the corporate tax is actually going to produce a lot of revenue. We're going to plow a lot of that back into a middle class tax cut. I think the middle class tax cut is bigger than the amount of revenue that we're going to produce from the corporate tax cut. So I think we're going to push the deficit up more than maybe we should at a time when we're You know, where the deficit's risen from 33% of GDP prior to the financial crisis, it's 75% today, and the Congressional Budget Office says it's on its way to 150% as the baby boomers retire over the next 30 years if we don't raise taxes. So I'm a little leery about adding to the deficit. I would have probably scaled the middle class tax cut a little bit more, but I think we're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, we're moving in the right direction. Now, the dynamic tension of what the CBO and that is rating in terms of just the bill as it would stand, and of course the way they rate these things is on what they know. They're not a business advisor or consultant in terms of saying, okay, right now, I mean, clearly the economy in less than a year under Donald Trump has risen to 3%. The CBO said the new normal prior was going to be 1.8, maybe 2%. And Donald Trump came in saying, I'm thinking we could be 3 to 5% pretty quick here, especially if we get tax reform. But that projection and that prospect is somewhat lost in translation when we deal with some of these numbers, is it not?
Jim, no, I agree 100% with what you said. There is politics in the Congressional Budget Office, and I think when the economy grew slowly in the 8 years, when we should have seen a rebound from the recession that we never saw, and then we saw slow growth after that, they definitely dialed down their forecast to, you might say, justify the fact that that the economy was growing slowly, and they continue to use those slow growth forecasts. Today.
Right.
But they do other things as well, like they use what I said, they use something called current law scoring. So an example of this would be there's lots of corporate tax cuts where every year we renew them to try to get corporations to invest more money in research and development and things like that. And year after year, we renew those tax cuts. So we're never going to collect those taxes. And the scoring assumes that those things will expire and we'll collect the taxes. So when we say we're going to make some of those things permanent, they say, aha, you're contributing to the deficit, even though in the real world you haven't really contributed to the deficit at all. Another thing you see is in offshore taxes. We have a very, very high 35% rate. The rest of the world charges a very low rate for our companies to be able to compete. The government knows they can't pay 35% and compete, so they let them move a lot of profits overseas. Those profits never come back to the United States. They never pay taxes on those profits, and the scoring assumes that someday all that money's going to come back and they're going to pay this absurdly high rate. But meanwhile, a lot of that money has come back to the United States in ways that the government allows, where they don't have to pay the rate because they can't be competitive if they do pay the rate. So when we lower it to 20% to recognize the fact that companies can't be competitive in a world where the rate's 15 to 20%, they say, aha, you're never going to collect those 35% taxes that you were never going to collect anyway, but we're going to count that against you and say that it increases the deficit. And I do think that's why in this corporate tax cut, I think it's going to produce more revenue in the real world. Forget about all this political scoring and slow growth. It's going to produce a lot more revenue in the real world, and it's going to produce more growth because you just can't have a tax rate at 35% when
everybody else is
15 to 20% tax rate in the rest of the world.
Yeah, people do that which they get rewarded for, including businesses. So, and this has been the case. And, you know, going back to what you mentioned earlier with the previous administration, and traditionally coming out of every recession, we were kind of given a slingshot out of the recession. And it was as if the Democrats and Barack Obama purposely, you know, held back and compromised that slingshot effect by increasing all these regulations.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you can see that plain as day in the numbers. In the 25 years before the Obama administration, productivity grew at 2.5% a year, and productivity is the key to growth. In the 2 years when the Obama administration passed the Dodd-Frank Act, the Obamacare, and all the other anti-business regulations, in those 2 years before the regulations were passed, productivity grew at 3% a year. And since then, it's grown at 0.5% a year. So we've had 8 years at a 0.5% a year. That is a disaster for our working families because it's hard to get a pay raise if you only have a 0.5% of productivity growth. You need productivity growth of 2.5 to 3%. And to get there, you need a lot of investment. And when you try to charge a 35% tax rate, that investment's going to land overseas instead of here. And you need a lot of innovation and new ideas and entrepreneurial risk taking in order to get the productivity rates back up. And we've seen a little drifting upwards in the productivity rates, but the Obama administration was an absolute killer for growth, an absolute killer for productivity, a killer for innovation. And as you say, we should have seen a rebound and then 2.5% growth. We saw no rebound and 0.5% growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing, we'll be a little bit psychological here, Ed, if you can allow me, and that is that, in my opinion, productivity equates to happiness. Our country has not been very happy. You cannot be satisfied and fulfilled at that low productivity level. And we've been saying, even prior to Donald Trump's administration, is that there is this pent-up productivity just waiting to bust loose. And it seems that with the policies that are being enacted by this current administration, you've got people dreaming big dreams again. Stock market will probably go, they're saying, you know, it could be 25,000 this week, week's end. I mean, there's a lot of positive signs here. People are getting back to work. We've got the lowest unemployment rate historically, and they're not the kind of jobs, low-level, you know, paying jobs, fast food type jobs that we got under the previous administration. I mean, we're getting some good job opportunities here.
You know, I agree with you that the there's a lot of reason for optimism, and that optimism builds on itself because if you look forward into the future and what you see is slow growth, high taxes, heavy regulation, you say, geez, I'm going to be more cautious. I'm not going to take that risk. I'm not going to start that business at the margin. I'm not going to invest that extra money. I should live for today and not for tomorrow. When you look out into the future and you see less regulation, lower taxes, faster growth rate, higher productivity growth, you say, maybe I'll save a little more today and invest for the future because the future's starting to look a lot brighter. And that is a positive feedback loop that can be very, very powerful if you give it enough time gradually over time. If you expect, you know, big changes in a very short period of time, I think you can get a little bit disappointed. But if you look at the United States relative to Europe and Japan, since the beginning of the 1990s, we were gradually getting more and more productive. We were growing faster than they were. Our wages were rising faster than they were. You know, the financial crisis put a dent in it, but then the Obama administration came in after.
Right. We got to go to break. We got more from Ed right after.
Attention to anybody of any age who takes any prescription medications. How would you like to save up to 85% on almost every prescription drug you're currently buying at your local pharmacy? We're talking about saving you real money on most of the top prescription drugs. Up to 85% savings. Asthma medications, you can save up to 85%. High cholesterol and high blood pressure meds, save up to 85%. And many, many more. This is not a hard-to-use discount card. These are real savings on prescription meds delivered to your door in days. We have expert prescription consultants to help you right now. It's a free service. So call now and learn how you can save up to 85% on most prescription drugs.
Call now, 800-362-9337, 800-362-9337, 800-362-9337. That's 800-362-9337.
When did your light bulb go off? We're talking about that idea you have for a new product or app. Listen, if you want to make your idea a priority, but you don't know how to get it off the ground, you call Davison, the one company with over 25 years experience and exclusive process that turns ideas into products and apps that are found in retail stores and online. Our team has helped tens of thousands of people, just like you. Call now and ask for our free idea starter guide. We'll show you how to securely get started and protect your idea. Whether you have a patent or not, our process will get your idea ready to get in front of a corporation. Don't let your light bulb of an idea go out. Call Davison now for your free idea starter guide. Davison charges fees for services. 800-211-8392. 800-211-8392. 800-211-8392. Again, that's 800-211-8392.
Hi, I'm
Marcia Miller from Mud Pie. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time. But some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why Mud Pie supports the life-saving research and programs of the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health. Help us give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.
Does the current world crisis in North Korea or our domestic crisis right here in America concern you? Well, I know it concerns me. My friends over at Legacy Food Storage have solutions in the event there's the inevitable. What's the inevitable? Civil unrest, a run on your local grocery store. And here's my question to you. If this happens, how do you feed your children? How do you feed your grandchildren? Legacy Food Storage has the solutions. In fact, they can help you implement a simple plan to take care of your needs in the event of the inevitable. By calling them right now, I have authorized them to give you a special 20% discount at checkout by simply using GCN. Call 888-543-7345 or visit them at legacyfoodstorage.com. That's 888-543-7345 or visiting them at legacyfoodstorage.com. Make sure you use GCN at checkout for an incredible 20% discount. Don't be a victim. Take control of your life now.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Bill Martinez here, and not so live right now because we're remembering the best interviews of 2017.
Getting America back on track.
Oh, come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come, ye. Oh, come ye to bed.
Bill Martinez live.
Hey, it's the way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon, Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Welcome back, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour, Ed Conard is with us, New York Times bestselling author, visiting scholar with the American Enterprise Institute. I'll tell you, Ed and I could spend at least an hour. I mean, I would count it a privilege, and maybe one time we've got to make some time for this, because what Ed can share with you in terms of the reality and the clear perspective of the economy. Just one topic alone, Ed, on income inequality. You know, people want to get, you know, all liberals, progressives want to get all amped up about income inequality, but they don't talk about productive inequality, do they?
Well, you know, they always talk about trickle down, mm-hmm. and I describe it as trickle up, which is it's kind of an honor and a privilege to get taxed, but first you got to create $5 of value for everybody else before you get a dollar in your pocket to get taxed on. And so, you know, they forget that small amounts of profits actually trickle up in order to end up in taxable income, and that when I'm competing against another competitor, they're also offering a product which you wouldn't buy something if it wasn't worth more than you were paying for it.
Exactly.
You know, I think economists estimate that it's about $5 is about the amount of value you have to create to charge a customer a dollar in order to get the profits, in order to pay the taxes. So really, it's trickle up. It's not really the trickle down that the Democrats want to describe.
And they underestimate what goes in to, you know, these dreams that people have that keep them up all night, to say, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to have my own business, you know, taking second mortgages, borrowing money from in-laws to make their dreams realize. And you know, the risk reward is there. And it's not that everybody gets the golden ring. I mean, it's a percentage. I guess it's Darwinian, because you've got to survive. And it's the strong that do survive the free market system.
No, I think it's a very small amount of success which bubbles up from a very large pool of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you want to tax the success that bubbles up, the less risk the people will try to take to try to produce those successes. And I think you can think of it a little bit like, you know, trying to be an actor in Hollywood. What is the chances of actually succeeding? They're pretty low.
Exactly.
But people, you know, sacrifice a lot to try to get that slim possibility of success. And, you know, you have to recognize that, a lot of failure goes into one random lucky, you know, I won't call it just lucky, it's fortunate in that the people worked hard, but they also got fortunate too, because one success bubbles up, but, you know, it could have been Facebook, but it could have been MySpace. It's hard to know which one's actually going to succeed. And we have to recognize that a lot of risk-taking goes on in order to produce it, and as well, lots of mistakes get made. So if you want to get out there and say, you made a mistake, we're gonna regulate that, we're going to regulate this, we're going to regulate that. We want an economy where no mistakes are made. You don't get any growth if you don't take any risk and you don't make any mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what I liked about Hewlett-Packard and their founding. One of the things that stuck out when I studied that company, Ed, was that they celebrated mistakes. I thought, wow, what a concept that they welcomed mistakes in much the same way that that other inventors who celebrated mistakes and said, hey, it was not so much a mistake. I just found out one of the ways it's not going to work. You know, kind of thing.
It's the only way, because if we knew it worked, we'd go do it.
Yes.
All the things that we know are already being done. There's already competitors supplying those things. So when you try to find the next product, when you try to find the next innovation, you have to run a lot of experiments to find them because you don't know what they are. And if you don't get any mistakes, you don't get any growth.
Exactly.
And I mean mistakes, not only mistakes, I mean mistakes that you look backwards and say, how in the world did we do that, or why did we do that? You still have to allow for just a lot of blatant problems and mistakes if you want to get the growth. You try to regulate all that stuff away, you don't get any risk-taking, you don't get any success, you don't get any growth.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, I want to talk about your column going back to tax reform. And now that we have a Senate bill approved, we got the House, they're going to come together and hammer out something in the middle that it looks like, at least on the surface, it should be win-win for most of the people. But one thing in particular that you were opposing was the Rubio Lee Amendment. Tell our audience about that, if you would, Ed.
So that was just, it's really a trade-off between how big the middle class tax deduction is versus how big the corporate tax deduction is. And if you look at all the analysis, all of the growth comes from the corporate tax deduction. All of the deficit comes from the middle class tax deduction. Now, you know, we already have an extraordinary amount of debt. And let's not kid ourselves, if the government spends the money, somebody has to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my argument was that I'd like to see the corporate tax rate held down at 20%, because that is what produces all the growth in this tax bill, rather than raising it to 22%, which is what the Rubio Lee Amendment did. And I would leave the middle class tax cut at the $850 billion it's estimated to be, instead of making it even bigger, because you have more deficit and slower growth, which all that does, a couple different things. One, it leaves our kids with more debt. I think that hurts our kids. I don't think it helps our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, you know, if we borrow that money from investors, investment goes down so that it can fund consumption, which goes up. That slows down growth. Not a good thing. And if we borrow the money from offshore lenders like the Chinese, we have to run trade deficits to do that. It's an accounting identity. We have to run trade deficits. And one of two things happen in trade deficits. A middle-class worker loses their job to a Chinese worker who's willing to save more money and buy
exactly.
that government debt. So what they gain in tax deduction, they lose in wages. I don't think that's a good trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, at best, we end up borrowing a whole bunch of money from the Chinese, but they do it by lending us Chinese goods, so we end up stimulating their economy and employing their people instead of our people. That isn't so great either. Yes, we get a one-time increase in consumption, but it doesn't do anything to increase our growth rate. It increases their growth rate instead of our growth rate, and it leaves our kids with more debt. So at the margin, I would keep the corporate tax rate as low as possible, 20% instead of the 22% that was proposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that $850 billion of deficit, or of tax cuts to the middle class, gets pretty close to the amount of revenue we might collect in the corporate side. We give it to the middle class. I'm for that, but I don't like the idea of running up even bigger deficits and slowing the growth rate down.
Exactly.
That's a bad idea.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with you. And if we know that those are the benchmarks and what we're managing, and because of Trump and his, and the nature of his management style, you know, probably for the first time ever, we might have some accountability on this and we might see some success.
Yeah, no, I think, I think he's done a very good job to this point in letting the Congress and the Senate work their process. Mm-hmm. I think if you try to overmanage it, you don't get to, there's lots of different competing contingencies. It's hard to herd the cats. We see that in the Senate. We saw it with the trying to repeal Obamacare.
Exactly.
You have to let those processes work their way out, and I think they're coming to a pretty good point on the Rubio Lee amendment. I would have said I wouldn't have pushed it in the direction they were trying to push it in. I like the direction where it in fact landed, and you know, just for the sake of your audience, of 100 votes, 79 were opposed to Rubio Lee, and 21 were for it. So ultimately, the Senate came out on the same side of the trade-off as I did.
Yes, exactly. Well, I know that Donald Trump over the weekend had kind of threw an echo out there and said, yeah, you know, he was open to get up to 22%. I was excited about 15. The compromise up to 20 was like, okay, and now that both the House and the Senate have agreed that 20 is the number, I think that's the number, that's the number you manage to, and that's going to be up to the administration as they have been doing, unlike some of the things that happen on the Democratic side where they pass a bill and just let it go out there and, you know, let the bureaucracy handle it because there's just such great empirical evidence to demonstrate that when you do that, it's very successful. Of course, I'm joking.
Well, I agree with you that 15 would have been even better than 20, and it would have accelerated the growth even more. You know, I was disappointed when they talked about moving it up to 22 because there's a lot of companies out there that are, you know, they're paying 12.5% to Ireland in order to pay zero to the United States. And if you try to charge them 22, they're not going to bring those profits back to the United States.
Exactly.
They're going to continue to pay 12.5%. 15 would have insured. But I'll say this, the Senate bill is actually quite thoughtful because it lowers the rate to 20, but it does one other thing as well, which is it creates a vehicle for the taxation of intellectual property, which is what all this overseas profits really are, at 12.5%, which makes us ultra competitive with the rest of the world. It's a really clever idea because it makes no sense to let these guys pay 12.5% to Ireland. Just collect it ourselves. Let us get
exactly
to 12.5% because they're never going to pay. They're never going to pay more than what the rest of the world is charging.
Yeah, and the rest of the difference between 12.5% and 20%, you can almost work out the differential by saying, am I going to make am I more efficient back in the United States versus being in Ireland? And some of the corporate entities are, you know, they're doing the numbers. And, 20%, they can make it work. 22 might be a little bit of a problem, to your point.
I don't disagree with that. And that's why I push for 20.
Well, we'll keep pushing and we'll keep them honest. Ed Conard has been with us, New York Times bestselling author, visiting scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, former partner with Bain Capital. Ed, always a pleasure to have you with us. Have a great holiday, sir.
Bill, thank you for including me.
You got it.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
The answer to being